been under construction, and that was going to be used for regular flights. And now that other vehicle will be one that will be used for manned flights in the future. My guess is sometime next year. They hope to do a launch, you know, with people in it before that. But unless I hear that they have a handle on what went wrong with this first spacecraft, I don't see that happening. Unless they find out real fast, figure out what's wrong, I think that might delay things for them until possibly next year. But time will tell. Let's see, one other topic. Okay. Another SpaceX topic. You're aware that SpaceX is building something called the Starship. Starship consists of this massive star vehicle. It's going to have 7 Raptor engines on the bottom of it. It'll actually have the capability of launching from Earth and going into orbit, and then from orbit it will actually be able to deorbit and come back and land vertically on the ground. So I mean, it will be the first spacecraft that could do that, launch completely whole and come back the exact same way. Even the shuttle didn't do that. The shuttle went up, sure, the shuttle went up and flew into space 135 times, and they come back and land on a runway, but they shed quite a bit of material, like the external booster with the hydrogen, you know, the external tank with the liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. That all, you know, gets burnt up and lands in the ocean. And the 2 solid boosters, they came back. They were reusable. They did use those. They reused them. But the tank would not be returned. So this would be the first vehicle to do that, to have that capability. But that's actually only the beginning of it. You know, below this 150-foot tall, 30-foot diameter space vehicle with 7 big Raptor engines, they plan on putting another 25-foot booster below that with 31 Raptor engines to boost this spacecraft into orbit. So in other words, the booster would launch the actual spacecraft, which normally has the capability of launching itself, and that would be able to go into orbit. The main big booster, I think he's calling it the Starship Heavy, will come back, land on a barge out in sea, and that would be reusable. And so would the top part. So would this Starship piece. The goal here would be you could send it off to the moon, you could send it off to Mars, you could send it any way you want, and eventually bring it back and land it vertically as well. So you'd be able to land the main booster as well as the second, what I call the second stage. So, you know, that sounds like a big deal, but it sounds like they got a long way to go. But right now they are building the test vehicle for this, and they're building it in 2 locations. They originally were building it in a place called Boca Chica, Texas, right near the Texas-Mexico border. And they have this, let's call it a test vehicle, is what it is. It's 30 feet in diameter. It's got 3 landing legs on it, and presently it has only one Raptor engine on the bottom. And so far they've tested it. They had it tied down where they lit it off and it went up about 10, 20 feet, and then they brought it back down again and didn't allow it to go anywhere. But the next test, they're going to bring it up, they said, around 20 meters, and then they're going to continue with this until, you know, eventually get higher and higher, up to, you know, 500 meters, and then bring it back to the same place where it took off from. So they're practicing all their launching and landing with this Starship vehicle. And the piece they're testing has nothing to do with the booster. This is the piece that will be used to actually take the Starship to orbit. So now this one's not officially going to go to orbit. This is their test vehicle. They call it the Star Hopper. And the reason they got that name is that when they were doing the Falcon 9, they had something called a Grasshopper. Grasshopper was, a similar size to a Falcon rocket. Now this thing is similar to the true size of a Starship vehicle. So now, this of course not being good enough, he wants to do more. So presently, he's building another one of these things in Florida right now, so they, I did find one picture of them constructing this stainless steel monstrosity that's going to be able to take off and land. So now he's got a crew in Boca Chica, Texas doing it, and now he has a crew in Florida doing the same thing. So I don't know if you know what his ultimate plan is. I know he plans on launching them from Boca Chica, but he now plans on launching them from Florida as well, right next to where he's launching the Falcon Heavies. SpaceX took over Launch Complex 39A. That's where the Apollo Saturn V used to launch from. And now he's taking that launch complex over. And now, right near that launch complex, off to the side, plans on building another launch facility for this Starship vehicle. So he's got big plans. Don't know how far he's going to get with it, but he's pretty much succeeded in a lot of things he's talked about, although sometimes many, many years off from when he started. So, okay, before I go on, is there any questions or comments? This is WS2N. Okay, very good. Anyway, there's from NASA, anyway, they put out a drawing or a picture of what the Gateway space station will look like. The Gateway space station plans to go into a highly elliptical orbit around the moon, and they plan on having now six different sections or modules. Compare that to the International Space Station, where it's about 15 or 16. This one's going to be six. But in the beginning, because of money and because of lack of agreements with other countries, they just plan on eventually having one, and that's the power and propulsion element. So that's been proposed, and now they've allocated some money to it, and I believe Lockheed is involved with producing that. But that would be only one module. There's five others that they have planned. The Orion spacecraft would be the vehicle that would visit this. And that, of course, has been under construction for decades now, it seems like, with from NASA. Now we'll be able to have four people on board, and now we'll be able to go to the moon and come back using the space launch system that's never launched yet, but they hope to do that by 2020. We'll see if that eventually can do that without any more delays. And then the first launch would be unmanned. They would launch a Orion spacecraft to the moon and back. And then the next launch would be a year later, and that would be with a crew. And the idea of the space station is to eventually have a place for people to stay on a permanent basis. And when they develop landers, they could separate from the space station and go down to the moon and come back. Well, anyway, the other five parts, the other five modules, they call it the Esperanto, and that's another module being built, going to be built by ESA if they ever, commit, the European Space Agency. And then the U.S. Plans on building another node, I call it a node. They call it a utility module. So you'll be able to have docking ports on there and some living space. And then two large modules, one built by JAXA, the Japan agency, similar to what NASA has. JAXA will be building one of the modules, and ESA will build another one. European Space Agency. And they, of course, the U.S., not to be outdone, has the U.S. U.S. module that they plan on building. Lockheed wants to build that as well. I don't know if any money is being allocated for this. They bought test pieces into NASA to test things out to see how they work, and everything seemed to be fine with the U.S. module, but, you know, it's not the permanent hardware, that's for sure. They're probably a couple of years away from developing that. And then there's going to be a multi-purpose module as well that will be built. Canada will be building a robotic arm, and so you basically have a smaller version of the International Space Station flying around the moon if the present plans stay the way they are. But I'm not counting my chickens before they hatch. There has to be a lot of money allocated for this, but that's the plan anyway. Let me drop it. This is WS2N. OSIRIS-REx update. NASA at the OSIRIS-REx mission, and it's presently hovering around Bennu. Bennu is an asteroid, and they plan on eventually going down to the asteroid and collecting samples. They have something called a TAG unit. It's an arm, and TAG is touch and go type of thing. That's what he called TAG, touch and go. And it's like a round disc, and it's going to shoot nitrogen out when it gets close to the surface, and whatever debris gets shot up will be sucked into this arm, and they'll be able to bring it back and return it to Earth probably around 2025. But what happened with OSIRIS-REx is they looked at Bennu, and they thought it was going to be, you know, rocky, but, you know, a lot of smooth surfaces here and there. They can't find any smooth surfaces anywhere with the pictures that they're taking. So now what NASA is proposing is there's a company called CosmoQuest. It's a planetary science institute, some kind of citizen science system. They plan on having people sitting in front of their computers. They want you to have a relatively large screen. You'll be able to download their software and rules and tutorials on how this works. And as a volunteer, you'll be able to count rocks and pebbles and every little spot that they photograph, which is, apparently it's numerous if they're going to have the public do this. And, you know, you to participate, you're going to need this big screen, and they want you to, you know, sign up with them. And apparently, there's no money going back and forth, but you're going to be able to help them decide where eventually they're going to try out this TAG machine, this touch-and-go arm that's going to be reaching out to the asteroid Bennu. So I thought that was interesting. Instead of, you know, to contact them, so I haven't got the exact information on who to contact yet, but apparently, I guess that information is going to be coming out soon. But, you know, just wanted to let you know about it. You could actually volunteer to become part of this thing. I guess you'd have to go to their website. I haven't done it yet. This CosmoQuest, looks like it's one word, CosmoQuest, probably .org or something. I haven't tried it yet. But they've done other work for Kepler, you know, looking for planets that are going around other star systems, and TESS is another telescope that does the same thing as Kepler, looking for planets going around other star systems. So, any comments or questions? This is WS2N. Okay. I've talked about the Astrobees before. The Astrobees are on board. There's two now on board the International Space Station. Eventually, there's going to be three. The two that are on board are Bubble and Honey. We haven't given names. Queen didn't get launched yet. This went up with a Cygnus spacecraft that's docked to the International Space Station on Unity, one of the modules, or no, it's a NASA calls it. And the astronauts brought them in. I've talked about them before, but if you haven't heard about them, they're these cube-looking things. They're about, it looks like about 18 inches cube. And they have the capability of seeing. They have a claw on it. They grab things. They fly to the station. They work on one big fan. And then there's a bunch of vents that open up. Depending on what vents open up, it will make the astro bee go left, right, up, down, or to the station. It will, they'll be able to actually move cargo from one end of the station to the other. It could be done by astronauts or even by mission control in Houston. You know, the astronauts could be sleeping and these things could be flying around doing things. As an RF detector on it, or RFID, correction, RFID detector on it, and everything on the space station has a tag, so if somebody lost something, you know, where's that wrench that I was using, this thing could fly through and it would pick up the signal, and with the claw and everything, it might be able to even bring it back. It runs on lithium batteries. Before these were launched on Cygnus a while back, there was also another launch that brought up charging units. So they mounted these couple of charging units to the wall in the Kaibi module, the Japanese module. So when an astro bee feels it's getting tired and needs to recharge, you can fly all the way back and, you know, to all the different modules and come back to the Kaibo module, and it finds the charger on the wall, plugs itself in, and recharges it. It also has communication capability. It's got a tablet attached to it, so if an astronaut was working somewhere, this thing could come flying over, and they'll be able to use it. They're going to put it through all kinds of tests. Not like it's ready to go now. They just started testing it now. Everything worked fine. It flew through the module and everything, but it won't be put into operation for a year. It's going to take a year for them to, you know, work out all the bugs and everything, make sure there's no problems. I guess they don't want this thing flying into a switch or something. But, you know, if all goes well, they'll be sending up a third one as well, so I have three on board. This replaces these spheres. Yeah, these small spheres about the size of a soccer ball that kind of did the same type of thing. They were the predecessors to this. They've been flying on the space station for about 10 years now. So they're going to be retired, and these more modern, they're more powerful as far as computer capability and dexterity is concerned. It's going to be, they're going to be taking over. Also, the James Webb Space Telescope, that's been way delayed. I remember I was supposed to launch in 2017. They did have an update on it. They sent half of the system, the spacecraft system, into a big box and tested the temperatures, brought it up to temperature, brought it to the lowest possible temperatures, where it's going to be exposed in space, tested it for vibration, noise, and everything went well. Just a couple of years ago, it didn't go well. There was all kinds of problems, and that was one of the causes of many delays. So that's the deal there. Let me drop it. Okay, another release of money. This is only around $250 million from NASA, but they picked three companies out of eight, that wanted to do landings on the moon for NASA. But they picked these three companies. Orbit Beyond is one name. Astrobiotic, that's another one. And Intuitive Machines. The only one I knew of was Astrobiotic. They've been building the Peregrine lander for years. Peregrine was supposed to be one of the landers that was going to compete in the Google Prize, you know, which of course never worked out because nobody was able to have a lander in time. Google Prize came out in 2007. They said you have to land something by 2017, 10 years, and that time expired. So, but some of these people were working on it. Israel was one of them, with Bereshit, which they tried to land on the moon month or so ago, and that didn't work out. They crashed on the moon. Another company was Astrobiotic, but they plan on launching their first vehicle, Peregrine, 2021, so 2 years from now. These other two companies, I don't know, Orbit Beyond and Intuitive Machines, that now have contracts with NASA to develop their vehicles further to, you know, to what it was. Apparently, Orbit Beyond is it's a New Jersey-based company, so maybe they're within the sound of my voice, and they had connections with India. I know India was involved with the Google Prize as well. So I guess they might have a lander that was, you know, pretty much developed to the point where NASA's happy with it. They're going to give them some money to develop it further. And Intuitive Machines, well, don't know anything about them, but they signed a deal that $77 million they got out of it, and they have a landing place that they're supposed to land in. None of these vehicles are going to be landing near the South Pole, is where everybody wants to go. Everybody wants to go to the South Pole and set up a base. These are just going to land in, you know, mid-latitude locations. I don't get, but that's what they want to do. We'll find out if they, you know, how this gets developed. Orbit Beyond has a plan on launching on SpaceX, and the other two haven't picked a launch provider yet. But I guess with all this extra money, they might be able to pick something real soon. Astrobiotic got $79 million. The other one, Orbit Beyond, got $97 million, so I guess they must really like them. I don't know why they don't get the exact same amount. You know, they did the same thing with SpaceX and with Boeing when they got the contracts for the crew missions. You know, SpaceX got X amount of money, and Boeing got a lot more, I think twice the amount. So, don't know who does the math over there. This WS2M. Yeah, I just got five more little pieces of information on what's coming up as far as launching and landings are concerned. Tomorrow, midday, around 11, I think 11:45 or 12 o'clock, they should be deorbiting the Dragon CRS-17. It's the 17th mission to the space station. So they've been doing this for a long time already. So they're up to number 17. It's right now attached to a Harmony node. They're going to fill it up with a lot of science experiments, they said this time, to be returned, you know, thousands of pounds of stuff. And it will be landing in the Pacific Ocean sometime tomorrow. They always come back on the same day when they deorbit. Cygnus doesn't. Cygnus usually stays up and does other experiments. You know, that cargo vehicle, you know, that's different. They'll stay up for days or weeks before they come down and deorbit. But Dragon comes right back. They always did. You know, and then you have June 22nd, which is you know, a couple of weeks away during our field day weekend. It's going to be on a Saturday. SpaceX is going to launch the Falcon 9 Heavy again. They just did that not too long ago. They put an Arab satellite up, and they also did it February 6th of last year. When they launched the car, that was just a test of that vehicle. They put it into operation with the Arab launch, and now it's going to be a military launch and some NASA satellites as well. So that means it will be on NASA TV when it does launch on field day. So I don't know, I'll probably be trying to do Morse code with Limark at that time. But I don't know, maybe they'll have a Wi-Fi set up where you'll be able to watch it live on NASA TV. It's always an interesting launch. They've done it twice before. They take the main core of a Falcon 9, which has 9 engines, and they take 2 strap-on Falcon 9 boosters, a total of 27 engines, that light off all at the same time to put their payload into space. The second stage, of course, is always attached to the central booster, and that will separate and put their satellite, or satellites in this case, into their respective orbits. So that's the deal on that. You've got a crew coming back from the International Space Station on the 24th, so that'll be Monday after field day. You have the 3 people coming back. It's an American, Ann McLean. She's been up there for months on end. I guess it's 6 months. David Scott Jacques, David St. Jacques is from Canada. And Oleg Konienko, he'll be coming back. Oleg Konienko just did a spacewalk 2 days, let's see, 3 days ago now, with another Russian, Alexei Ovechkin. They did a spacewalk out of the Russian part of the International Space Station, hooked up some handrails. They brought back some science experiments that were on the outside of the space station. And they spent 6 hours doing that. I think they said it was a 240-some-odd spacewalk for the construction or the maintaining of the International Space Station. The original piece went up in 1998, so here we are in 2019. Continuous occupation since 2000 on the space station. And then you have another crew going up. They'll be coming down on the 24th, and you'll have another group going up on the 20th. So you have an American, Luca Pomento. Luca is the same guy that, he's from Italy, he's the same guy that did a spacewalk some years ago, and he wound up getting fluid in his spacesuit, leaking from inside the spacesuit. And it blinded them terribly. And that was an abort. They terminated that mission. Usually, that means drop everything, get back to the quest lab, get in there. That's where they go into the space station, into quest lab, and get straightened out, because it creates instant blindness when you have that kind of problem. That's what happened to Luca. But he loves it so much, he's gonna go back up. He was up there for like 4 or 5 months, and I guess he's gonna be up there for another 6 months on this flight. So that's the deal on that. Also, July 2nd will be an Orion Ascent Abort mission. Orion Ascent Abort mission is similar to what I was talking about, what SpaceX wants to do. They're gonna put an Orion spacecraft, which will eventually have a crew of up to 4, and they're going to put it on, instead of a regular booster that's not developed yet, they're going to put it on to a Peacemaker booster, a rocket. Peacemaker used to carry nuclear bombs. Well, now they're going to use it to test out their abort system. They're going to launch this thing from Launch Complex 46 in Florida. It's going to take off and not going into orbit. It's going to get about 6 miles up at the same speed that the regular space launch system would get up to, and it's going to separate, and they're going to test it. They want to see how this works. The launch board system will pull away from the booster. Control jets will come back on to orient the spacecraft, and then you're going to have the jettison of the launch abort system from the Orion space vehicle. That pulls the whole launch abort system away, allows the spacecraft to have access to its own parachutes to eventually land in the ocean right after an abort. So that's coming up on July 2nd. So that should be pretty good to watch right before July 4th. So that of course goes out of Florida Launch Complex 46. That's the story. I don't have any more topics. If there's any questions or comments, I'll be standing by. If not, we'll turn it back to Dick or Roy. Dick, are you there? K2RIW, WS2N for the space portion of the TechNet. By the way, if anybody wants to contact me, you could use spacenetreport@gmail.com, or you could, of course, use Roy's email. Back to you, Dick.
Paul, did you completely run out of material? 16 minutes too soon? I'm going to double check with you. You run out, and we want to pass it back to Roy. Is that your suggestion, Paul? Go ahead.
Yes, Dick. I didn't have as much as previous weeks. More or less a lot of updates on things that are going on. I didn't even have any something new that I thought was really good enough to put into Roy's website, roy.ac2gs.com. Usually I find at least one thing to put it in. There was a Russian vehicle that launched Soyuz. It was a Soyuz launch vehicle, and I do have a picture of it. I should have sent that over. But it's a picture. It's up in the air. It launched successfully, and you can see a lightning strike, talking about lightning, and the lightning hitting the top of the rocket and coming out of the bottom of the rocket and going all the way down to the ground, I guess. The lightning is, a rocket is usually like, Soyuz, I think it's 150 feet high, almost 160 feet high, so the lightning coming out from the top to the bottom, each one looks like it's about 10 times the length of the vehicle. Put a top lightning bolt in the one coming out from the bottom. It survived, no problem. Took off, put they have a GPS system in Russia, just like we do. And they've been launching satellites left and right. And this goes to medium orbit, 11,000 miles up. Got there, worked out okay. The lightning didn't bother it. I guess just used it as a conduit to get from up high to down low.
How recent was that lightning shot, do you think, Roy? Paul?
How recent? Oh, I don't know. Last week. It just came out. If I saw it earlier, I would have printed it and sent it over to Roy.
And to JK, right?
Go right ahead, sir.
We must be just all having the same thing in our minds, because it's interesting he mentioned that, because I was going to just throw in with the extra time, maybe Dick, quite a bit about it, but maybe we want to just talk about Apollo 12. I was reading about that and how they switched to auxiliary and it fixed the glitch, and I was just wondering about some more details about that. How did switching to auxiliary solve everything?
Yeah, Apollo 12 had a lightning strike on takeoff, and I know that NASA has set some very strict standards since then, that if there's a certain amount of local potential lightning, they won't do a that Apollo 12, as I remember. I think some circuit breakers became unset, and the astronauts reset them real fast, and the mission continued. But that could have been a lot more complicated. Isn't that true, Paul?
Yeah, I think Alan Bean is the one that reached up and changed all the switches that got them everything working. He was one of the astronauts that walked on the moon. He was the fourth person to walk on the moon. And then Pete Conrad was the commander. And they always thought they were going to have a glitch, and Pete Conrad said, "Boy, I guess we had our glitch." After this thing was reset, the rest of that mission was fine. That Apollo 12 landed on the moon. He landed very close to where they wanted to go. They wanted to land right next to Surveyor 3, and that's the one where we launched a vehicle years before, and it was sitting on the moon. They walked over to it from their landing position and got a hold of the camera, ripped that off, and put that back to the mission control. I mean, they want to show the accuracy of what it went. So, everything else went fine after that. And Pete Conrad, he was a cool guy. He was the guy that wound up on Skylab, and he pretty much helped save that day, too. He was the first commander on Skylab. So, Apollo 12 did very good. Apollo 13 didn't do too good. But 12 did good. Back to you, Dick.
Which one of the missions did the sun get into a camera on the moon, and after that the camera was blinded? Was that 12?
Yes, it was. That was Alan Bean. He picked up the camera and moved it right toward the sun, accidentally fried it. So that's why we don't have any good color pictures from, it was supposed to be a color camera too, from Apollo 12, unfortunately. Alan Bean, artist, he was an artist. I think he just died not too long ago. But he had the ability to make beautiful paintings and what he saw. So, but yeah, I believe he was the one that, I'm trying to think of the name of the camera, if you went in H, I'll think of it. You probably know it, Dick. Back to you.
I think on the next mission, Apollo 14 or 15, one or the other, RCA then supplied them a camera, which could be aimed at the sun without getting damaged. Isn't that true?
Yeah, they changed. I think they had that Hallibrand. I forget the name. It's a common name from years ago, too. But begins with an H. And that didn't work out. The new cameras, I don't remember. And they got better with some time. So they didn't have those problems. Yeah, well, if you ever look at some of the pictures, they have some incredible pictures. When everybody's getting bored and everything, I was sitting there watching TV, and it looked great on a black and white TV, but when those pictures came out in Life magazine, it was just fantastic.
Called Hasselblad.
That's it.
The Hasselblad was the fixed picture camera. That wasn't the motion picture television camera, was it?
Well, that's the, they were, they weren't going to have a motion picture. Maybe it was. I think it was both. They were going to mount it on the tripod, do both with it. There was only one camera, as far as I know, that they brought on to the outside of the moon.
I think that was a television camera by which they were giving them live broadcasts back to NASA. Isn't that true? To Houston?
Yeah, it was. Then they had other cameras for taking still pictures. Yeah, they definitely had, because that wasn't the only one. So, yeah, they had multiple cameras. So, yeah, I'll have to research it. But, you remember the later missions, For instance, the last mission, they had a camera, a color camera, mounted on the moon, staring at the LEM. Right before they took off, Eugene Cernan geologist. Well, when they took off from the moon, they had a standing camera with a motor on it, and they were able to follow the spacecraft up as it took off. So they really got good as time went on. I don't know what kind of camera that was. And they had the timing it from the moon, from the Earth to the moon. Just have to be right. Today would be all digital. It would be no problem.
Which was the mission, Paul, where some very vital downlink was being picked up by the 210-foot dish in Australia? And they were just barely operational because of high wind at the time, but we would have had a dropout of downlink mission if Australia was picking up. Which mission was that stuff called? Which Apollo?
I know they were having problems with Apollo 11. That was the that was the mission. They were having all kinds of problems, and they finally worked it out, and they were able to get the pictures from the moon, they changed the time schedule. In other words, Neil Armstrong wanted to go out earlier, so they thought they'd be able to pick up signals, they thought maybe Spain or Goldstone would be picking the signals up, but because they changed the time that they went out, they said Australia had to be ready like now, and they were supposed to be ready, but they had problems, and then they really rushed to straighten it out. So it must have been Apollo 11. Is a good movie called Dish, D-I-S-H, and it's all about that problem in Australia.
So I think you're saying that it's possible that one small step for man, that whole mission, that whole message, maybe got picked up in Australia, and Goldstone was out of range, and Spain was out of range at that time. I think that's what happened, Paul. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's, you know, if you read about it, that's exactly what happened. So they get the credit for actually, you know, getting that live transmission of Armstrong first, you know, walking on the moon, came through Australia. And if you get, you know, you get a chance to see that movie, it's all the movie now, but I guess you can get it in the library or something. Dish, it's very well done. They say there is some changes that they made in the movie that weren't exactly 100%, but they said most of it was right.
In the case of Apollo 13, I think there was interference between the frequencies being transmitted by the lunar module versus the command module. They weren't made to operate simultaneously. And I think, again, Australia had to do some fancy footwork to pull the frequencies off to one side so that the two systems could work simultaneously. Does that seem to ring a bell also?
I don't remember if Australia was involved with that, but I'm sure they all were. You know, that took multiple days to get back, so only, you know, one out of three antennas could be looking at Apollo 13 at one time.
Okay, I think we'll end up 4 minutes early. I thank you, Paul. I thank you, Roy. Turn it over to Roy so he can give his addresses one more time. AC2GS, K2RAW.
Thank you, Dick. Yes, if anyone has any topics they would like me to discuss, any questions they would like me to try and answer, any refutations of anything that I said, feel free. The email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. That's Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra.com. And links to the articles that I mentioned can be found at roy.ac2gs.com as well. And hopefully I'll meet a whole bunch of you guys out there during next week's Limewalk Outdoor Ham Fest, where I'll be showing some of my little 3D printed stuff. So please come by and say hello.
And I think that takes place on Sunday, June 9th. Is that true?
Stick, a week from today. We'll be there probably sometime like 9:30.
But I think it is on Sunday. Isn't that true?
It's next Sunday.
A week from today. Okay. Bye-bye, you all. We'll see you next week. K2RAW, clear.
Good night, Dick. Catch you next week. Come here to Huawei Y.
Yeah, you could have signed in now that we've got a 3-minute timer.
You have a 3-minute timer, and the net did not destroy itself, right? It did not do whatever you think it was going to do, right? Did you have any problems with people timing out?
I think I timed out once on the 3 minutes.
Okay, well, there's always next week. Practice makes perfect. WHOAY clear. I keep on king. All habits die hard. WS join clear.
Dick, if you're still there, I was wondering if you guys had talked about the controversy over 5G potentially interfering with what weather satellites, WB2BXL.
Yeah, Frank, this is AC2GS. We covered that a couple of weeks ago. As a matter of fact, we had a gentleman who works in the cell phone industry who tried to make a little bit more sense of how the 5G frequency range is the range where atmospheric water is absorbs the RF, and that was the problem that the 5G feed into that attenuation signal.
Oh, they're in the so-called water hole?
Well, yeah, but it is, they're not identically on the same frequency, but they're so close that, that the bleed through is worrisome.
Oh, interesting. And I guess, and I'm willing to bet the FCC is not willing to say, hey guys, you can't do that, you got to move it.
Yep, you guessed right. Money talks and weather patterns walk, I guess. So they're still arguing over that.
Yeah, okay, thanks. I'll look for the recording at some point. I was just wondering whether that was real or just more junk science. I mean, so much of what we hear on the news is junk science. All right, have a good night, Roy. WB2BXO.
Okay, likewise. Have a good night. Sometimes I occasionally throw out junk science and ridicule it, but no, this is a legitimate problem that they're suspecting. So hopefully they'll come to some kind of mutually advantageous compromise, the two of them.
Well, maybe you address this too. What do you think of this? You saw the article in last Sunday's Times, that the Navy's been chasing around some strange objects that they think are possibly hypersonic drones that nobody's telling them about.
That was actually one of the stories on my agenda for tonight. If I had more time, I would have gone into that and the fact that the Starlight satellite missions have scared a lot of the UFO sighters out of the doldrums. So I had two UFO stories for tonight, and I'll probably roll them over next week unless something more interesting happens in the next week.
Yeah, okay, fine, Roy. I'll try to be on next week because it'd be interesting to hear your views on this Navy controversy. My nephew works for one of the SpaceX subcontractors that's working on the Starlink satellite, so when I get a chance to talk to him, I'll ask him about that. 7-3 again, Roy, WB2BXO.
Okie doke, 73. Have a good week, and stay tuned next week. Who knows what great scientific discovery I'll be blathering about.
Night, Roy.
The time is 12:04 a.m., 73, and good night from the WQVL repeater. tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system.
Thank you.
at 8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
There you go. N2EO and 2MB.
That's quick. N2MB, N2EO.
Radio's been on all morning.
I'm actually was on last night. I was listening to the TechNet in bed, and I fell asleep.
Okay, I listened to the TechNet for a while last night. Oh yeah, somebody came over, so I had to shut it off and then leave. Otherwise, I would have listened to it to its completion. But I was carried away. I had to leave. Whatever.
Okay, Barry. Why don't you call the guy? Maybe his car is ready?
Nope, not.
What did he say, Thursday?
That's correct.
All right, so maybe Friday he'll come over?
Possibly. I don't see why not. I could probably come over Friday, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I might even be able to bring you the cat.
Barry, that'll be wonderful. Because all I need is a cat box and fresh step litter. Everything else is here.
Okay. There's a very good chance I can do that. I hope this computer doesn't shut down now. Sometimes if I don't use it for an hour or two, it'll shut itself off. I did not shut it off last night. I came in the room this morning, and mysteriously asleep, it was on Linux. I didn't do that. I think Sidney did.
Okay, well, ask her. She's probably still sleeping. By the way, Barry, I bought a big, big bag of dry cat food. I hope he likes it, or she likes it. I also bought Friskies, makes a variety pack of wet cat food. I bought the variety pack to see what the cat likes.
Okay. That's going to be a lucky cat, let me tell you.
I mean, why miss that?
A lucky cat.
Yes. I'm going to be a lucky owner of the cat. Barry, I hope the cat is as friendly as your cat. You know, I think they're better than people. Dogs, too, because they don't turn on you like Patty. You give them food, water, and they love you forever.
Yeah, I tried that with Sidney, but she didn't love me forever. He asked for more.
Okay, but you got it.
Of course. Right. Yeah, people are very different than cats, and you can't equate them the same. I don't think I'm going to marry my cat.
Right. All I'm saying is animals in general, they don't turn on you. Grease them on and love you.
Okay, well, a lot of people don't turn on you, too. But your relationship with people is a lot more complicated than your relationship with cats. So, you know, I can't really equate the two, Richard.